Monitor, a friendly, familiar, dependable companion each and every weekend. I'm Brad Crandall. And right after a song by Sue Rainey, the editor of a mammoth new encyclopedia on the American theater tells us what he found out about some of the stars as he compiled his gigantic volume.
There is a circus parade, and there's an Easter parade, and there's a Christmas parade, and that's a peanut parade, and there's a baby parade, and there's a beauty parade. By now the point has been made, we love to watch a parade. You only have to say great, and you're sure of a smile, cause it's a chance to get away from yourself for a while. And when the sunlight hits the silver and gold drums, the crier they come, we'll save you from the doldrums. You see the tumblers also having their ups and their downs. A shout goes up because somebody has slaughtered the clown. No better antidote to chase the frowns, and when they who and they are, can't tell a kid from his paw. There's the Kiwanis Parade, and there's the Lions Parade, July the 4th a parade, Thanksgiving Day a parade, and there's St. Patrick's Parade, Columbus Day a parade. By now the point has been made, we love to watch a parade. For several miles or more, the girls on the floats are reviewed. Of course, the gorgeous boats away your attention was blue. A nice departure from the hum of existence, a colorful show for which we go the distance. And in the long procession, there are gigantic balloons. Thrown up in case you hadn't looked at the Sunday cartoons. For school is up for tracks and for tycoons. And you immediately can meet the citizenry. A military parade, and Labor Day a parade, and the policeman parade, in everybody's parade. And when a half has been played, you'll see a college parade. By now the point has been made, we love to watch a parade. And there's a veteran parade, and there's a Macy's parade, inauguration parade, and Mardi Gras parade. Oh, how I love a parade, don't rain on Rainy's parade. And there's a mama's parade.
If there's anything, and I mean anything, you want to know about the American theater, a new and impressive book will tell you. It's a staggering volume full of little-known facts, information, and background, all about the people and productions that have made the American theater the giant that it is. The book's title is The Biographical Encyclopedia and Who's Who of the American Theater. It numbers 1,101 pages, weighs over 6 pounds, costs $82.50, and its editor is our guest right now, Walter Rigdon. Welcome to Monitor. Well, now, how long did it take you to start pulling together such an incredible amount of information?
Well, about 5 years altogether. Three years under a crash program and 2 years of the preliminary work. I had about 100 people working for me, and they were lined up about 6 deep at my desk with all sorts of questions from, well, you name it.
I was just wondering, there must have been a good many cases in which stars or producers or directors either weren't cooperative or remembered things somewhat differently from the way the newspapers did and things of that kind.
Oh, yes, quite a few of those. We had people graduating from Yale at the age of 12. We had actresses playing leading roles, which if you know the name of the role, there's one I have in mind. She says she was 13 at the time.
Well,
it goes on and on.
Did you get any surprises? Were there any actresses or actors that you expected? I'm thinking now, one or two I can think of right offhand who are sort of grand dames of the American theater now. And one would expect them to lie about their age. And I just wondered if any of them surprised you by being very forthright and straight ahead.
Yes, as a matter of fact, one did. Peggy Wood. She, all of the information about her, she said, was so completely erroneous. And she wanted it to be true for the first time. And she gave me dates that made her older than any published reference made her. it had always been said she was born in Philadelphia, such and such a year, and actually it was in Brooklyn. So even the place was wrong. Then there are other actresses like Ethel Griffiths, who's proud of the fact that she goes back more than 70 years on the stage.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to note that, for example, David Merrick's biography does not appear at his own request. How does this happen?
Well, simply enough, I got a telegram from Mr. Merrick stating he would sue me if I published it.
Why?
Well, there are aspects I can't go into on the program, but...
Yeah, well, obviously you can't tell me why.
We're a little too thorough in our research, I would say.
Would you mind running down some of its little-known facts about some famous people and shows?
Beatrice Lilly, for instance, says that she paints under the name Beatrice Van Gaughen, and she enjoys electric canoeing.
Electric
canoeing, yes.
I see. Did you pursue that subject at all, or did you just listen
way? Barbara Jaffer says she enjoys swimming in shark-infested waters.
I think anybody who performs in front of the critics of this country enjoys swimming in shark-infested waters, really.
Right down to... Hermione Gingo said she made her stage debut playing Cardinal Wolsey in a kindergarten production of Henry VIII, which I can't think of better casting.
When someone insisted on a specific item of biographical data, which your information said just wasn't appropriate, is this what you consistently had to do, then, is just drop the item entirely rather
than... flatly refused. I mentioned, you mentioned, Mr. Merrick's biography.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a case where, rather than to publish a press agent's dream of a story about Mr. Merrick, we elected not to run anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there was at least one case of an actress who was really up and coming, whose press agent insisted that we run, you know, what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was guiding this career and nothing was to appear in print except what he approved of. As a result, her biography doesn't appear at all.
I see. Billing, I imagine you had to be very careful about the manner in which you refer to someone's performance in a given show because of the fact that billing may have been a six-month fight between two performers.
Yes, well, we didn't go into billing at all. Fortunately, Fred Astaire resolved that for us, I would say, the first 2 weeks that we were preparing the book, because his first film was Flying Down to Rio. And it was a Dolores del Rio film, and he and Ginger Rogers were the featured performers who walked away with the film. And he insisted he had star billing in that film, so at that point we decided that we would never get back out if we had to solve all of these things, too. So we eliminated billing completely.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what was the biggest surprise, Walter, in the book for you?
Finishing it.
Thank you very much, Walter.
Thank you.
Our guest has been Walter Rigdon, editor of the Biographical Encyclopedia and Who's Who of the American Theater, a gigantic one-volume library about our theater and its people.
You made it that way. You sweet love made it that way.
A hummingbird hummer, every day was a slumber in the shade. It was a tale-telling whopper, banana split topper, a tall, cool blast of lemonade. You made it that way. Your sweet love made it that way.
Yeah, yeah, you made it that way. Your sweet love made it that way.
Water splashing, a fall down kind of laughing, good old times rehashing afternoon. It was a backyard barbecue, a hammock swinging moon, neat the summer's watermelon moon. You made it that way. Your sweet love made it that way.
Yeah, yeah, you made it that way. Your sweet love made it.
It was a melody of crickets, hanging in a thicket. It was the game of hide and seek to kick the can. It was alley oxen free every time for you and me. Cause hiding was the best part of the game. You made it that way.
That's Perry's latest, and there's much more good music ahead. And Al Capp on the subject of blondes. So stay right where you are on the Monitor Beacon. Want to win a free Thanksgiving turkey? Enter Wetson's Say Sweepstakes now. No purchase required. Get your free entry blank at any Wetson's hamburger restaurant. Be a Thanksgiving winner.
Americans are really concerned about water pollution today.
We've got to pay the price to get this stinking mess cleaned up and get these streams back to where we can enjoy fishing in them, swimming in them, and not worry that our child's going to come down with something because he's waded across one of them.
America can halt pollution. Right, clean water, Washington, D.C.
Just before Alamein, British commandos set out on a 400-mile mission across the Sahara. See Desert Patrol on the Sunday Film Festival at 11:30.
See Richard Attenborough and Michael Craig in Desert Patrol on WNBC TV Channel 4 tonight. The conversation station, WNBC, New York. You're back with Monitor, and it's now 19 minutes after the hour. It was announced this week, incidentally, that a bunch of petrified grapes, more than 2.5 centuries old, were found in Damascus, Syria. There was no mention, however, of whether or not a bunch of petrified wine drinkers were found lying beside the grapes. But I'll tell you this, that must have been a vintage year. True that Al Capp rushes in where angels fear to tread. It's also true that he's nobody's fool. Monitor's expert on nothing with opinions on everything would like your close attention for the next 2 minutes while he expresses himself on the subject of the great American legend, blondes. Here's Al Capp.
I'll bet it's been a long time since you heard the phrase bleached blonde, and I'll bet the person who used that phrase was born a long time ago. There was a time when it was mean to describe anyone as a bleached blonde, and it was humiliating for anyone to be known as one. Respectable folk were convinced that a girl who'd deceive you about the color of her hair would deceive you about anything. But times and social attitudes have changed. Today, blondness is a human decision more often than a whim of nature. Today, the girl who decides to change to blonde is criticized only if she's too lazy or tasteless to change her makeup and her wardrobe to go with her blondness. A recent poll of a swinging fraternity at one of our larger universities revealed that blondes were overwhelmingly preferred as dates. The swinging young gentlemen couldn't care less that the blondes they preferred were natural or chemical. The very fact of a girl's blondness, as they understood it, was sort of a public announcement that she wanted to be noticed more than those with less brilliant top plumage, and along with that went the possibility that they might be more responsive. The swinging young gentleman didn't tell the pollsters whether they were or were not more responsive, because although they were young swingers, they were also young gentlemen. But women are sure blondes are more responsive. The average wife who was told by the average venomous girlfriend that she saw her husband lunching with a lady isn't apt to feel anything more violent than average wifely curiosity. But the wife who hears that her husband was seen lunching with a blonde feels just plain sick. The great American myth is that gentlemen prefer blondes because they feel they may not have to be perfect gentlemen with them. This is Al Capp for Monitor.
Our Talking Cartoonist is a regular feature every weekend on Monitor. Mike Somm Singers. Most doctors don't smoke cigarettes. True or false? Well, this is just one of many important questions about smoking and health that are answered in your Heart Association's cigarette quiz. The answer is true. Recent surveys show that only about 22% of doctors smoke cigarettes today. In 1954, 51% of doctors smoked. Now, how about this question? Smoking cigarettes is not a health hazard for women. True or false? False. According to present evidence, women smokers have increased risk of lung cancer and heart disease over women who do not smoke. Some other questions answered in the cigarette quiz included, does smoking hurt teenagers? Do filters make cigarettes safe? Do people gain weight when they give up smoking? For the answers to these and other questions, ask your Heart Association for your free copy of The Cigarette Quiz. Orchestra and Where is Love? And by the way, where are you? Well, it doesn't really matter because Monitor reaches all America on NBC. In the area of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you'll hear us on WJAS. Station identification time now, and then Monitor returns. This is Brad Crandall.
In just 40 minutes, singing star Wayne Newton on Monitor on the NBC radio network.
Sunday, November 19th, and Monitor is with it. I'm Brad Crandall. The Accents on Driving this half hour with Chris Economaki, set to report on today's developments in the automobile racing world, Sport of Speed. And in just 3 minutes, a look at the ways in which 8 million Swedish motorists and pedestrians made the traffic change from left-hand side of the road to the right, and the results.
Come on, and say it's all wrong, and that's the way of the
Elmer Bernstein's orchestra and chorus. On September 3rd, 8 million Swedish drivers and pedestrians switched from left to right. It had nothing to do with politics, just the side of the street on which traffic flows. Reports from Stockholm this week show that it's already paid off with a marked decrease in traffic deaths in the first 2 months compared with September and October of last year. The changeover was a gigantic educational program which involved such dissimilar objects as socks, ties, underwear, songs, and seeing-eye dogs. William Toth, professor of safety education at New York University, covers the why and the how of the vast change as he chats with Monitor reporter Charlie Holmes.
Professor Toth, tell us what happened.
Well, here was a complete society of 8 million people that suddenly had to change their habits. Why? Because the neighbors like Denmark and Norway said, our drivers having too many accidents in Sweden. The Swedish drivers are having too many accidents in our country, and we think it would be better if you sort of got into the uniformity of driving to the right. And so the Swedish government decided to do this 4 years ago, and they began planning this. And fortunately, they had built their cars, and 90% of the cars over there had left-hand drive, mm-hmm. so that immediately when they came over to the right side, there was no great problem. Now, what were some of the other problems? Actually, the drivers, this was a small part of the problem. They had to sort of retrain 8 million people as pedestrians. They had to take, for instance, they went so far as to bring the dogs in from blind people and train them to look to the left rather than the right when they were crossing their streets.
In other words, they had to retrain the seeing-eye dogs.
Yes, they had to retrain the seeing-eye dog.
How did they go about retraining the human beings?
Well, I had a devil of a time when I first went over because I almost got hit 4 or 5 times when I stepped off looking to the left and suddenly the car came from the right. And then, of course, I was there for a few days and then I had to retrain myself to do this. But they did it through television. They did it through radio, newspapers. They went so far as to use socks and ties and underwear to advertise this. Now, let me tell you how. The word for right in Swedish is hoger, H-O-G-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
And they used the first letter H as H-Day, and this was the symbol of the entire changeover. So they had socks with H's on them. They had ties with H's. They had underwear with H's on them. They put H's on milk containers. They put H's in on various publications. They had them along the road. They gave every motorist a small H to put on his ignition on his dashboard and by the window where he would open his door to remind him the changeover is in effect. And one of the very funny things about it, they had a national contest for the song that would best commemorate this occasion. And the song that won was a song called Go Right Svensson.
Go Right Svensson.
Which was a very typical Swedish name. They had to go down and move mailboxes, hundreds of mailboxes from one side of the road to the other. They had to move little milk stands from one side of the road to the other. They had to bar up bus doors on one side and tear new doors in on the other side. They had to rechange traffic lights. They had to put new signs down on the road. And they had been doing this for a long time, and they covered the signs.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a Saturday, about noon, in all the large cities, all traffic ceased. Everything stopped except emergency vehicles. And interestingly enough, the workmen went to work tearing down the old signs, tearing down the covers, and Sweden turned into a big holiday, the whole country. Something they hadn't planned. A very festive mood came about. People put on their Sunday best, got on bicycles, they got horses out, and they were riding around town on the bicycles, horses, and walking. And I think I would have loved...
Because traffic was not
Yes, there was
moving.
No traffic.
For how long?
For about 24 hours while the changeover was actually taking place in these large towns.
Just no traffic in
no
the whole
traffic
country.
except the emergency vehicles. And here was one of the big side benefits, and New Yorkers can appreciate this. They found that during the changeover, when traffic was stopped for a 24-hour period, a tremendous drop in the pollution index in the whole country.
Is that right? That's amazing. How many cars would you say operate over there?
About 2 million, a little over 2 million.
Would you have any idea of how many accidents might have occurred the next day, or...
None. They had accidents, small accidents. No fatalities. In fact, it took them 3 days for a fatality to occur, which was unusual because they had normally fatalities every day. But the interesting thing was the American press played this up as an accident attributed to the right-hand changeover.
Mm-hmm.
But this was one of the best investigated accidents in Sweden ever had because they didn't want it attributed to the changeover. They took this man into the medical school, and an autopsy showed that he had suffered from a heart attack. And the heart attack, of course, was the real cause of the accident rather than the changeover. But so far, the last word we had was that they have had a much better traffic safety record than they had prior to the changeover.
Well, everybody is probably being more careful because of it.
The greatest educational program, I think, in the history of man concerned with traffic safety.
Thank you, William J. Toth, professor of safety education at New York University, who has given us an insight into the traffic changeover that was recently made in Sweden. This is Charlie Holmes for Monitor.
Now the golden sun can see us kiss. Every summer day we'll love like this. When the snow
Ed Ames, and a few roses around the country got some of that white stuff this week. A surprise storm blanketed Boston and much of New England with over a foot of snow. Businessmen, defeated in their attempts to get home on the jammed roads, gave it up, and there wasn't a hotel room for miles around. Boston and a New England winter may remind you of Currier and Ives prints, but let's face it, sleighs and superhighways just don't go together these days. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
When you follow the eagle, the red, white, and blue eagle, invest in Freedom Shares, U.S. savings bonds. Follow the eagle.
that savings bond.
The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. Monitor continuing at 11 minutes before the hour with the voices of Nancy Sinatra and Lee Hazelwood.
I've been away, the eagle flies, rode his wings across all the sky, kissed the sun, touched the moon, but he left me much too soon. His lady bird, he left his lady bird.
It's time for your weekend checkpoint for news, views, and results from the world of auto racing. Brought to you by the many service stations from coast to coast that carry a brand of Pennsylvania motor oil. In a moment, a report from Chris Economaki. But first, you know, what's so great about Pennsylvania motor oils? Well, let's put it this way. Some oils take several days to produce. Pennsylvania oils took 1 million years. That's right. Nature has never produced a crude oil like it. Motor oils refined from Pennsylvania crude insist on a brand of Pennsylvania motor oil. And by the way, all of you sports car enthusiasts, you can get a complete rally kit with checkpoint signs, windshield numbers, and sanctioned scoring slips from the Pennsylvania Grade Crude Oil Association. For just $1, you get windshield stickers numbered 1 through 100 and a pad of 120 rally scoring slips. Just send your dollar to Checkpoint, Box 96, Oil City, Pennsylvania. And now, here's Chris Economaki.
Thanks, Mel. Big money being paid out in NASCAR late model stock car racing has made possible the early retirement of big name drivers Marvin Panche, Ned Jarrett, Junior Johnson, and Fred Lorenzen. This week, NASCAR's second biggest money winner of the year, Dick Hutcherson of Keokuk, Iowa, joined the list of retirees, announcing that his driving days are now over. Winner of $75,065 this year, Hutch will go to work for Holman and Moody and oversee the preparation of 1966 champion David Pearson's car. The 1968 stock car racing rules, announced last week, are essentially the same as those enforced this year, thus provoking a blast from Chrysler's competitions chief, Ronnie Householder. He objects to the one carburetor limit on the Chrysler Hemi engine, while Ford and others using wedge-type engines are allowed two carburetors. There's bound to be more heard on this situation before the first big 1968 race rolls around. The last major midget race of the year will be held Thursday at Ascot Park in Gardena, California, the traditional Turkey Day Grand Prix being the attraction. This year's race will star A.J. Foyt and Mario Andretti in the 150-lap small car event. And at Daytona Beach, Florida this weekend, the Newspaper Enterprises Association and Nine Flags International-sponsored American Road Race of Champions comes off. A staggering field of 347 cars and drivers from 34 states will take part in 14 half-hour events that will determine SCCA's amateur champions for the year. And now for the news that everyone is waiting for. At Phoenix, Arizona this afternoon, in the Bobby Ball Memorial 200-mile race, Mario Andretti kept his hopes for a third straight national championship alive by winning the event, sharply cutting A.J. Foyt's point lead for the title. Foyt, seeking an unprecedented fifth national crown, went out of the race on the 88th mile after locking wheels with Jerry Grant. Bobby Unser led until 19 miles from the checkered flag when his car slowed and Andretti got by, with second going to Al Unser and third to his disappointed brother, Bobby. Gordon Johncock remained in contention for the title with a fourth-place finish, with Lloyd Ruby taking fifth. Bud Tingelstad, Mel Kenyon, Bob Hurt, Ronnie Duman, and Arnie Knepper rounded out the top ten. Speed and purse both were record. The USAC big car season ends next Sunday at Riverside, California, with a 300-mile Rex Mays Memorial and the title a three-way toss-up for Foyt, Andretti, and Johncock. Billy Vukovich beat Gary Bettenhausen to the wire in Friday night's Tucson midget race, but Gary celebrated his 26th birthday last night by beating Vukovich to the line in the Phoenix event. This is Chris Economaki for Monitor.
Sport of Speed with Chris Economaki, editor of National Speed Sport News, is brought to you each weekend by the many famous brands of Pennsylvania Motor Oil. For the lasting good of your engine, insist on a Pennsylvania Motor Oil. This is Mel Allen for Monitor Sports.
Tijuana Brass playing Wade in the Water. The largest broadcast news organization in the world stands ready now to update your weekend with the latest national and world developments. NBC Monitor News on the hour coming right up.
This is Brad Crandall.
Keep to the latest news now. It's on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now from everywhere.